It was obviously quite a week, and I'm just this week giving a talk on some reflections that I had about the events of this last week. It's less a straight-ahead Dharma talk than more just my own impressions. So I'm interested in hearing your own as well as what you experience in terms of working with your reactions to the storm and the aftermath. As I was saying the other day, when we're young and we become sick and injured, there is this tendency to think of sickness and illness as an anomaly. But then, as we get older, when we get sick and we get injured, when something happens to the body, we realize that we're in a fragile form, that it's not a given, and that we have to learn from the experience. Very often, if we get sick and we don't pay attention to the body and we just start running around, we can make matters worse. We can get waylaid and wind up sick again. And even greater than that, when we go through a real illness, when we're adult and we have some perspective, it can be a very powerful reminder of impermanence. The fact that we're in a fragile shell, as Shakespeare said, a mortal coil. And so it's nothing to take for granted. In fact, it can be a very powerful lesson. So just as that is the case with the human body, I personally had a obviously began to sense that people were beginning to understand that externally, the place where we live, the region, the metropolitan area, is not something that should be taken for granted. I think when 9/11 happened and the blackout in 2003, there was a sense of, oh, this is weird. You know, this is strange. This shouldn't happen. This is a unique event, but it didn't really feel like it was carrying any message that we should be aware of. But increasingly, I think now, and I'm not just talking in terms of global warming and that, I'm more talking about that it's worthwhile perceiving this type of catastrophe for so many, not in terms of some anomaly, but in terms of a real, as we say in Buddhism, a divine messenger. The Buddha saw death, illness, aging as a divine messenger carrying something that we should learn from. And I think that it's worthwhile when we see that the place where we live, everything around us, is not something to be taken for granted, is not something to be assumed, but is something that's actually vulnerable. And that's one small reflection, but I had some a bunch of ones that were more along the way we relate to impermanence and the way we relate to events like this. I noticed that as I talked to many of my friends, there was a couple of themes that people were expressing. Some people in the aftermath of the the hurricane, when it became clear just how much devastation there was to people, some friends very valiantly jumped up and, you know, raced to the Rockaways and to Red Hook and to Coney Island and to the areas that were affected, and immediately tried to be of assistance as wherever possible. And then there was another group that used it as almost like a vacation. And none of this is about judgment at all. I talked, in fact, to some very devout Buddhist practitioners. Some, it was split very evenly. Some immediately went into, you know, sort of Operation Save the World, which is really wonderful. And some people just said, you know, this is great. I don't have to go to work. I'm going to do that writing that I wanted to do, or read that book, or I'm just going to spend it watching season one of Homeland, you know.
It's pretty good.
So, it's very good, actually. And, you know, some people use it as a time to take care of themselves, or, you know, go to the gym. Some people use it as a time to connect with others. And I think that it's really important to learn from this, how we react when suddenly everything is pulled away, when the rug is pulled out from under us, is a very important message. I think that when people immediately run and are of service, it can be an indicator that there's this yearning to be of help to others in our lives that is very largely unfulfilled during our day-to-day lives. And so if we use the aftermath of a storm as a way to, you know, be part of relief efforts, not only is that something to do and feel good about, but it's something to learn from, to take away this understanding that, oh, there might be this sense that I'm just, you know, I might be doing really well with my job or my art or my family, but there's a sense in my normal life that I'm not, you know, a part of the world. I'm not making some positive effect. On the other hand, when people use it as a time to just unwind and relax and treat it like time off, I often feel that these are people who have overextended themselves and who have accumulated too many obligations and haven't given themselves enough time in life to relax and just drop out of the busyness mind. And so I think it's worthwhile to look at that. Maybe this is a message that we have to bring, this taking care of ourselves and this unwinding and this finding space in life to just be, not accomplish anything. You know, so many of us have to just accomplish and get things done, fill our schedules up, and when we just, oh, there's a lot to learn from that. And, you know, some people want attention. They want to hear from their relatives, and they want, you know, it's very dramatic, and this can be a message that people feel unwitnessed, unseen, unattended to. A second trait that I saw was that a lot of people were judging their reactions. Some people who were actually being of great service still thought they weren't doing enough and had that mind, I should be doing more. You know, I should be giving the shirt off my back. There are people in Coney Island who are freezing right now, you know. Staten Island. I shouldn't have a moment of peace. Or people who just relaxed and didn't get anything accomplished can be feeling, well, I had all this time and all I did was, just chill. And I didn't, I just walked around in my bathrobe and I didn't do anything. And I should have written a novel, And this voice of should is not a voice to rally around. We tend to think that this should be better, should be doing this, should be more accomplished, should be more helpful, should be better. We tend to think, well, this is a voice that I need because it's a voice that keeps me in line. And if I didn't have that voice, I'd just be a blob on the couch eating potato chips and watching Desperate Housewives. That's what I would be doing. And in my experience, that's not the case. My experience, people who show up to work, who are responsible or who do their art or who are, or who take care of their kids or who, whatever people do, they do it even if there's not that voice whipping them, that inner tyrant. I don't think that it's a voice to reward in any situation. Even if it seems to be a great idea to be of service during times of calamity, we can do that out of compassion, out of a sense to want to be of help for people in need, but we don't do it or drive ourselves by listening to that voice of I should be more helpful, because that voice does not stop there. That's the voice that when you wake up in the morning and you look in the mirror, the first thing it says, oh great, I'm bald again today. My forehead's even bigger today. No muscles to speak of, or that, I'm just talking about my own mind, but yeah. So the more I reward that voice in any aspect of life, even if it's just like getting myself out of bed when I'm sleeping in, or if that's the thing that motivates me, then I'm really empowering that voice. So I don't, when, say I have an appointment to do some volunteer work, where I do some phone counseling with people at times, and, somebody calls, and I'm just sort of chilling and enjoying what I'm doing, I don't encourage myself to answer or pick up the phone by, I should be doing that. I encourage myself by remembering, oh, I generally feel really good after those phone calls. And there's a big difference, because I'm rewarding myself, I'm reminding myself of the karma, the results of an action that's a skillful action. But whipping myself, rewarding the inner tyrant, is not a way to encourage myself. I hope this makes some sense. So another thing when we have this experience of doing without, it's worthwhile to investigate what are the rituals that I've become attached to that when they're taken away, I can't be happy. I wish I could remember the Pali term, but there's four kinds of clinging. Clinging to sensual pleasure, clinging to identity beliefs, clinging to views, and then there's clinging to rites and rituals, and habits and routines, sila. Do you remember the term? It's upadana. I think it's sila upadama. Yeah, that's what it is. And basically, you can take it to mean, the rituals of your spiritual practice, the way you meditate. Some people always need to have their cushion You know, Leah's always over there. I bet if she comes in one day and G has taken her spot, she'll be like, G, what the fuck are you doing? You know, we have our routines, and when something like this happens and it's, you know, it's interrupted, it's worth investigating. It's worth, in life, taking a day or two renouncing the things that we've become addicted to. Because everything is subject to change. I have a very ingrained iced coffee habit in the morning. And whenever I go anywhere else in the fucking world, I suffer the first like couple of mornings because, you know, it's like, you ever go to another country? Like, you go to... I went to Scotland. I was explaining, you take the fucking ice and you put it in the fucking coffee. They were looking at me like I was, you know, insane. It wasn't until, like, Starbucks finally got there. Like, oh, you mean what they sell in Starbucks? So it's worthwhile investigating these, because it's routines and habits are like, they're sort of like a stool that we're leaning on. And, you know, if we're overly leaning on it, then when somebody kicks it away, stumbles into it, we're going to wind up on the floor. And awkward metaphor, how do I work with that one? But anyway, it's, you get the idea. If we're overly dependent upon things, when they go away, we really suffer. I had an ingrained habit of, after teaching, going over to Whole Foods and getting their spinach pie. And the fuckers stopped making the fucking spinach pie. And when they told me that, part of my mind was, I want to speak to a manager. I didn't, but, you know, it's like, you're fucking with me, right? So I think it's worth, like, looking at these things that we take for granted. You know, I mean, in New York, restaurants that I've grown to love, if I, you know, the moment I start getting that habit of going there every Friday, damn, bang, the rents go up and they disappear. Anything that we ingrain into our ritual is something that is very subject to be taken away and to cause stress. When we see this impermanence, it really can develop a sense of not only gratitude. The more we experience our favorite places, our favorite shops, our favorite restaurants, our favorite corners, our favorite, you know, areas being changed or taken away or closed or whatever, it develops for us a sense of really cherishing something that we really like while it's there, not taking it for granted. And which is an acknowledgement that Ajahn Chah used to talk a lot about. When you see impermanence, it doesn't mean you distance yourself from people or things. It doesn't mean that you do anything other than cherish them and hold them gently and treat them with respect, because you know that they won't be there forever. Another thing is reprioritization, which is, if you're ever at a 12-step meeting, most of the time, people just want to share about any old shit. Really, you hear some extraordinary stuff. And, you know, people like, oh, I'm so angry with my agent. He sent me on an audition And this really goes to my core issues. Whatever, I'm glad you're sharing, but okay.
Yeah.
But when somebody shares, you know, something really horrific, something very awful that we all, you know, somebody talks about a parent dying or the loss of an animal that they cherished and loved or something that's really, really painful and there's real emotion, then when they say their time is finished and it's like back to a show of hands, everybody like, I don't want to follow that. I was going to talk about the bus being late. And this boils down to, you know, developing some tolerance. Our lives are so built up with convenience. There's literally, you know, a sushi shop on every corner. In my neighborhood, it doesn't. I mean, I don't know what cuisine we don't have in my neighborhood. I'm sure there's some southern Burmese cuisine that hasn't made its way there. But I mean, there's virtually every cuisine available that will deliver it right to my door. So I think it's definitely worth noting that we can lose our ability to tolerate the real, the inevitable inconveniences in life. We're so, I think, very catered to that we can become sometimes, we can spiral off in anger when the inevitable, what the Buddha called mosquito bites of life happen. Somebody says something cross with us. Somebody doesn't appreciate something that we do. We miss a train or we're late or we get cut off in traffic or a package isn't delivered that we want or, you know, that example I love. The Louis C.K. one. He has this routine about the week that they had Wi-Fi in the planes for the first time, and he's up in a plane, and the pilot announces, "Oh, we're sorry, but the Wi-Fi has gone out." And the guy next to him in his seat goes, "Can you believe this? You know, a week earlier, it didn't even exist." You know, you're up in a plane, 40,000 feet up, spiraling to your destination, which you can get there in an hour instead of, you know, being on a horse for days. My fucking Wi-Fi! What the fuck? This is bullshit. This is fucking bullshit. So suddenly, you know, when the entire L train is underwater. I mean, it's like there's water coming out of the fucking, you know, train tunnel. Then, when the L, if it ever starts running again, if any fucker starts complaining about it being full, you know, or late. You know, I think that this is somebody who's really got a tolerance issue because there's so much to look at and see, like, where can I extend this ability to tolerate? Can I really, if I see that all of this stuff is actually, you know, not natural, not God-given, not a divine right. It's something that through a lot of people's hard efforts and work and by a lot of conditions coming together is working most of the time. And to feel gratitude and cherishing that rather than to feel upset when we can't get 3 bars on our iPhone. Finally, it's worthwhile when we go through something like the storm to really cultivate a spirit of taking care of ourselves and to cultivate presence, which really means to just not only rally around that part of the mind that wants to make sense of everything, come up with a nice little, you know, what it all means. Because if anything, there's so many different impressions I've had. There's no single meaning of any big event in life. When we experience a loss, when we experience a divorce, a separation, when we experience losing the place where we live, when we experience losing somebody that we're close to, all these experiences, they don't come with nice little messages or meanings. What they come with is a lot of different feelings. And a lot of these feelings have to be purposely open to by not just listening to that, trying to make sense of it all mind, but by accessing, like, how is this sitting in the body? How do I feel? What's happening in the rest of my mind beyond the thoughts? Am I clenching my jaw all the time? Is my stomach tight? Does my chest feel hollow? Does my shoulders feel locked? Do I feel lightheaded or heavy and sluggish? Just to be aware of all the other components of an experience rather than just trying to fall into that, you know, that nice little fortune cookie statement that we can tell all our friends, yeah, that was fucked up. Yeah, that was fucked up. That was fucked up. Yeah. Did you think that was fucked up? Yeah, that was. That was fucked up. So I think that's all for tonight. That's basically what my impressions were about my experience. I hope there was something worth reflecting on, and I thank you for listening.